Hi, I'm Lucia.
And I'm Nell. We're Loud and Clear, a Julian the Phantoms rewatch podcast. We love it, you love it, so we're going to talk about it. This week we're covering episode 1, Wake Up.
Nell, do you want to give us a summary of what happened in this episode?
Oh my goodness. I wasn't prepared for this honor. Oh my god. Well, in this episode, we are introduced to the band Sunset Curve, a boy band which three of the members tragically die before their big break. We're also introduced to Julie, a young woman living in Los Angeles who lost her mother recently. Julie is introduced to three ghosts from Sunset Curve when she's clearing out her mom's old studio in preparation to sell their house and move. Julie is not particularly enthused about this happening, but she and the boys come to an understanding, and Julie plays music for the first time in a year.
Yes, and it's lovely and delightful. I love it. Okay.
So, since this is our first episode of this little side project of ours, you may be familiar with us from our other podcast, Totally Normal About That, or our other podcast, Raise No Cry of Murder. But we covered Julie and the Phantoms on Totally Normal About That, and had so much fun. What fun? Really enjoyed the process that we chose to cover it in a little bit of a different format, in this format, because we had so much to say about it. So every episode we are going to talk about the show itself, and then we're going to have a little segment where we talk about specifically the music, because it's so integral to the show. So if we get a while in and you're like, you haven't even really talked about the songs yet, it's coming, I promise. We have thoughts.
Yes. Yeah, it's shocking how much we have to say about a show that only totals like 4 or so hours.
It's 4.5 hours long, and I could have talked, like, I know we were like, can we do each of these episodes in half an hour? Maybe an hour.
We'll see. Well, we're actually going to try to be brief, and then what you get is what you get. So just know, whatever length this is our best effort to be brief. Like,
right.
We tried really hard.
Listen, no one has ever answered my course evaluations as brief. Verbose, perhaps. Prone to a tangent.
Okay, well, I mean, so this is the first episode of the show that we're talking about. Before we kind of get into a little more details about that, obviously just to, like, set the scene here, for those who do not know, this show is actually based on the show Julie and the Phantoms, which was originally a like Brazilian piece of media that was aired on their essentially version of like Nickelodeon.
Correct.
And ultimately, like, was picked up and redone by Netflix. So the original show had a few, like, a number of more episodes and a few more seasons. So there's obviously a lot more story that could have been done there, and for whatever reason,
we are very, very mad that there wasn't. The reason is supposedly that basically Netflix had asked for a kids' show, and then they got a show that appealed more to teenagers and adolescents, and so then Netflix was like, we don't know where to put this. Cancelled.
Which is so dumb. Like,
they were
gonna
get a movie, and then they didn't get a movie. Well, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, but you have a show that people really like anyway. Who cares if it wasn't exactly the target audience? Like, you have a show that people are really passionate about.
Right. And it's not like cable, where you're limited to the time slots in which you can put your content, so you have to have a certain number of shows in order to fit them into the slots. Like, this is streaming. You could literally have as many products on there as you want, or as many shows on there as you want, because it's streaming. So, like, it just doesn't make sense to me that they were like, nah, we just don't have a place for this. I'm like, the place for it is on your streaming platform. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, so all that to say, we were very disappointed by the fact that the show ended at one season, because there's clearly plenty they could have done. Even if they didn't follow the original show, like, there was still tons they could do. We won't be really talking about the original show or diving into that. We're sticking with the English Netflix version. But I do believe that all of the original show with subtitles is available on YouTube.
Cool.
So if you want to go watch it and, like, treat yourself to more of a similar, you know, story or whatever, then by all means, feel free to go. And again, it's like a, you know, Nickelodeon kind of vibe, with that show. So check that out if you're interested.
Yeah, definitely. So this is a Kenny Ortega show, which means it's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. Yes, clearly.
And it is, in fact, great. So,
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
We obviously...
I think it's just... We watched... You'd seen this show before I had.
Yes.
And then you introduced me to it and made me watch it, and it took over my existence for a couple of weeks there.
It absolutely did. As I mentioned in our other podcast episodes, one of my really good friends introduced this to me right around the time it was coming out, kind of to, I guess, deal with the ending of another show that we love, Supernatural. She was like, this is basically everything that that show is not, and you owe it to yourself to treat yourself to something nice. And I was like, okay, I will definitely go do that. And I did, and it was lovely. And then, like you said, I shared it with you, and I think you might actually love it more than I do, which is, like, tough competition. But it's watching so
good.
Watching
for this podcast is the 9th time I've watched the show, and we watched it for the first time in July. And 8 of those times happened in July.
Just like, yeah. Just
so okay, it happened, knows. We watched it at a time that it ended up being extremely relevant to things happening in our lives. Mm-hmm. And so it-
That's very true.
It sort of caught me at the right time in which I needed something to hyperfixate on. And the fact that this is a show that is primarily about grief and loss and moving on from that sort of mm-hmm. thing. Like, it was timely.
Yes.
To say the least. And it is once again, unfortunately, timely for me to be thinking about this show.
Yeah, honestly, I'm like, maybe just for the sake of our own lives, it's best we didn't get a season 2, because we're gonna cover this and then it'll be done. And then I feel like if we had more content to add, maybe that wouldn't be in the best interest of our lives. Because this just keeps aligning with, as you said, loss and, you know, hardships that we're dealing with personally. So who knows? Yeah. But in general, I feel disappointment that we didn't get more of it. It is very delightful.
Me too, especially because, like, we've obviously both seen the whole show. We're going to try not to, like, totally spoil everything, but it does end on a huge cliffhanger.
It ends on, like, several cliffhangers.
It ends on every cliffhanger.
Leaves us. Like, there's so many questions.
Which is really frustrating, because then you're like, wait, what happens?
Right? Like, where is this going to go? So, I guess that's what fanfiction is for. We're going to write our own stories and, like, determine where it goes, since Netflix clearly doesn't love us enough to give us any answers. Yes, so, as you mentioned, it's a Kenny Ortega project. It's delightful. Obviously, that means the music is great, and again, we're going to talk about that towards the end and just kind of discuss it specifically on its own. But I think I can see Kenny Ortega in a lot of other ways in this show. And the storytelling is definitely one of them, with it being centered around high school students and it being around music and, you know, them being in the music program. That is just very Kenny Ortega to me. You know, it's very Cheetah Girls, a High School Musical, what have you. And this is still that, but it's very much its own unique thing, and it feels very, like, fun and fresh to watch. And I appreciate that there's those elements there, but it's still its own thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it, you can definitely see the, like, High School Musical or Descendants influences mm-hmm. in this show. And we'll talk some about that in future episodes, in particular. Mm-hmm. But it's also very much its own thing, which I really, like, so it feels very much like it's part of the same family. Yes. And so I think it brings back a lot of that nostalgia for those of us who grew up with, like, High School Musical and those sort of Disney things that were the big Kenny Ortega things mm-hmm. back in the day. But it's also not just, like, a copy-paste repeat. It's like, oh, this is fresh, and this is new, and this is different. But it also feels a little bit like diving into your coziest sweater. Because it,
exactly.
it has the familiar vibes of, like, I know that things are going to end up fine, and, like, mm-hmm. it's going to be hopeful, and it's going to be sad, and there's going to be lots of feelings, but at the end of the day, you're going to leave feeling good about it.
Yes. It's, I always compare our media to food. I don't know why. That's just, like, the metaphor that works the best for me. Maybe because I like to eat. But I really feel like it's as if you, like, your favorite food is lasagna, and you love your grandmother's lasagna, and you go to a friend's house and their grandmother made lasagna, and it's a little bit different than your grandma makes it, but it's still a grandmother's lasagna. So, like, it's still amazing. It's just a different version of that. Like, this is what that is. It's this, it's the same thing that I love. It's just presented to us in a slightly new way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the drama choir nerd in me just, like, delights in that so much.
It's very, it does have so many of those sort of, I mean, it is a musical mm-hmm. show, like, it's a musical show, but it's got very musical theater vibes to it, even though theater isn't really as much of a part of it. Like, it still has a lot of those vibes, and it's just yeah. really charming. So
that is one thing I like about this show, is it really centers the musicians, and it obviously starts with the guys in Sunset Curve with their band and their performance, you know, at the Orpheum.
Yeah. Well, let's start talking about the show.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's talk about this episode in general. So it starts with this band at the Orpheum.
Mm-hmm. My first complaint right out of the gate is that the guy who plays Bobby, they don't let him sing for real. And I've complained about this before, and I'll complain about it again, because it just bumps me out, because there's, you know, when you actually sing, you engage, like, all of these different muscles in your chest and in your face. And yeah. so, like,
he's just opening his there. Mouth.
He's just opening his mouth. And I'm like, maybe this guy isn't a great singer, but, like, I just wish they had let him and, like, cut his sound out or something, because he just, it creates this effect where if you buy into the idea that he's actually singing, it makes it look like he doesn't care very much about the actual music, because he's not making any effort to, like, engage and make the sound, and his, like, face just isn't locked in like the rest of them.
Which, it, like, makes him seem really disengaged from the band and, like, he doesn't care about it. Which, like, I don't know, maybe yes. they were going for that. But the problem maybe. Is that we don't know. And so it just makes it look like everyone else is great right. and he's just also there.
Right. I'm just like, what's the deal with Bobby that he just, like, he obviously wants them to do well. And, like, he gets excited at the end about how, like, oh, they're playing at the Orpheum and everything. And but I'm like, are you doing this because you actually love music, or do you just want to get girls? Like, I can't tell.
Like, do you want to be famous? Yeah, well, because he says, like, that was the tightest we've ever played. And it's like, was it? Sir, my goodness.
Right.
That's the tightest you've ever played? I have to ask some questions about how loosey-goosey you usually are.
I know. And it's notable, too, that when it opens on their performance, which is excellent, it is their sound check. Like, this is not their right. actual performance. They're doing a showcase, which, you know, is like a variety of their music, but, like, for a smaller audience there at this very famous theater that actually exists in LA. And as Luke says, like, this is kind of where a lot of different bands got their start. But they don't actually get the opportunity to perform in front of the audience. So, which is just a huge bummer.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, kind of the plot of the whole show is that they didn't get to do that. So we'll get more into that. But yeah, so they do their sound check. It goes really well. They meet a girl. Her name is Rose. And they're all immediately flirts, except Alex, who just says a bunch of awkward things about how their t-shirts dissolve if they get too wet.
I love him so much.
He's so cute.
I'm just gonna say that over and over, guys. If, like, I just really do. I love him a lot.
Alex is he's my soul bean a little bit.
Right.
Like,
he's my precious little guy.
He's so tall, but I do want to put him in my pocket just a little bit.
100%. Exactly.
And then, so this is Luke, Alex, and Reggie, and then Bobby, and we'll find out their names later. I don't know when we find out Bobby's name, actually. Do we find it out in this episode?
I think we do. I think they introduce themselves.
They introduce them to Rose. So yeah, Luke, Alex, and Reggie. And Luke is like, they're going out. Alex, Reggie, and Luke are going out for hot dogs, street dogs. Bobby is going to stay behind for flirts. Because it's not food o'clock for him, it's flirts o'clock for him.
Right. He had a hamburger for lunch, so maybe
he tells Rose that he's a vegetarian and could never hurt an animal, and then Luke gives him a wet willy and says he had a hamburger for lunch.
Anyway, the other guys leave to go get their street dogs, and I just want to take a second here to point out that, like, it's very clear that this is not their first performance. Like, this is a special performance for them, because as they're leaving, Reggie is, like, passing out t-shirts and stuff to some girls in line for the showcase, which, one, notably, there's a line, like, of people waiting to hear them, so that's already significant. But also, the girls recognize who they are and call them by name. Like, they scream their names, so they know who they are.
They've got sort of supporters, but this is the gig that's gonna get them really noticed, like...
Right.
Mainstream.
It's like, yeah, it's, you know, it's the 90s, and so it's one of those things where this is the band that maybe has performed around LA, and now they're looking to get that big break so they can go, you know, national and whatever, and actually, like, garner a larger audience.
Right. I think one thing I want to point out here is, as they leave to go get their street dogs, Luke says, you know, that the thing that the woman inside was talking about, the girl was talking about, like, we have a connection. People can feel us when we play. He says something about that. And I just think that's particularly notable given what happens later in the episode, which is that people can hear them when they play, even after they're dead.
Yes.
And so I just think it's a really interesting, like, little piece of foreshadowing there that they've snuck in, this idea of, like, we have a connection, all of us, and, like, people feel us when we play, like, people we want to have that connection with the entire world. And I actually wonder if they'd gotten a second season if they were going to find out that, like, that was their unfinished business or something.
It would have been nice to know. They go to get their street dogs, and they're basically, like, getting their food out of the back of some guys. It's not even, like, really the back.
It's the engine block.
Right, it's, like, out of the engine block, which
Why is it not in the trunk? To keep it warm.
I guess he's using it to keep it warm.
Are they cooking street dogs in the engine of a car? No wonder they die.
I think they're cooking it on a grill next to it, but he's, like, putting them in a pan that's on the engine block to keep... I don't know, dude. I'm also very concerned about the fact that the condiments are in there, because that means they're warm. Like, all the...
Again, no wonder they died.
On their hot dog, and I'm like, that is hot mayo. That's and not spicy mayo, just warm hot mayo. Just looks disgusting. And they sit down, and they obviously make they're talking about getting the food out of the car, and Alex makes a comment about, like, basically how it makes him uncomfortable. And Reggie's like, oh, you know, chill out, dude. Like, you know, they haven't killed us yet, which
Alex is very funny. Alex says, that's a new flavor. And Reggie says, chill out, man. Street dogs haven't killed us yet. And then you see Luke starting to look a little, like, sweaty and green around the gills, maybe. Cut to ambulance.
Right. And you and when... I tried to figure out, like, what we thought killed them. And honestly, I can't, I don't know. It's clearly some kind of supernatural thing that happened where they died, because I don't know what would kill you that fast about a bad so hot fast. Dog, but, like.
Right, unless you're a horse and you can't puke, like.
At least they didn't suffer, I guess. Like, they died fast enough.
I mean, they feel like they suffered, probably, but.
But, like.
Not for long.
I guess, yeah, not for long. Like, it wasn't like they spent 3 days clutching the toilet and, like, you know.
No.
Slowly dehydrating or whatever. Like, that, you know, they died in, like, less than 20 minutes, so.
Yeah, but also, like, God, how embarrassing.
So embarrassing. You, like. Y'all sat down to eat hot dogs and, like, died on this random couch in the middle of an alley. Like,
I also want to point out that they sit down on this alley couch and there's a missing, there's a bunch of posters on the wall behind them. And one of them is a missing poster for Luke, which is going to be important later in the show. And I just thought of something really, really sad that we'll find out more about in a later episode.
Do you need to share it now, or should you write it down and share it later?
Oh god, I kind of want to share it now, but I also don't want to, like, spoil episodes that are going to happen in the future. But, I guess I'm just thinking about, like, the ambulance is coming to get them, and seeing this missing poster and going, we have to call this kid's parents now.
Oh, I wonder if they would notice, you know, because the whole wall is, like, covered in posters.
It's covered in posters, yeah. Oh, God, I hope. I mean, either way, it's tragic, but, like.
The one for Luke is, like, directly behind him. And then on, like, to the, if you're facing them, to the right of that is one about a missing dog. And to the left is one that literally talks, says, like, unfinished business on it. Which I just thought was, like, again, just, like, to all the people who were involved in, like, the set design and the, you know, creation and everything of all those posters, like. Very funny. I see you.
Yeah. So then we smash cut to, like, the opening title card, and then to many years in the future. So this was 1995. So, like, they were definitely rocking the grungy 90s boy deal. And now it's 2020, in a world where COVID just, I guess, doesn't exist.
Yes, correct. This is an alternate universe.
Yeah.
COVID does not exist.
No COVID. And we meet Flynn and Julie. And Flynn is Julie's best friend. And Julie, we don't know this yet, but her mom has died a year ago. And Julie has not played music since, but they are part of a music program, so you have to play music. So Julie is supposed to play music today. It's, like, her last chance to do so.
Yes. Notably, Julie is our primary character. She's the one we're going to follow around. Obviously, that's why the show is called Julie and the Phantoms. And it's fun because, like, you get the sense of history between them immediately. One of the things that happens is they have another girl there who is going around and, like, passing out flyers and everything. And we realize that this is Carrie, who used to be friends with Julie, and for whatever reason, they kind of fell out. They're no longer friends. We don't really know why.
We never find out when or why that happened.
Yes. But it's bad enough that Flynn calls her a demon and talks about the boy that she's dating, you know, them having demon babies and whatever.
She says it only takes one.
Yes.
Because Julie's and, like, Nick is nice. Nick is nice. And,
yes.
And Carrie's like, it only takes one to make an unholy demon baby.
And Nick is the boy that Julie has a crush on, who, again, notably is dating her, like, ex-friend, so.
He's also, I'm sorry, because the actor seems like a very nice young man, and I'm sure Nick is too, but he's kind of a drip.
Coming in with hot takes, like, right in episode one. Love
like,
it.
He just seems a little soggy of a person, like a little bit of a soggy cardboard kind of a person.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, obviously, is just, like, the writing for him, and also just that he's very young. I don't know what it is about him, but, like, of all the people, I know they're the same age, but he just seems
really
younger
young.
Than the rest of them.
Like, I think part of it is because they cast, so like, they cast a bunch of like teenagers, basically. And generally, teen boys start puberty later than girls. And the boys they cast to be part of Sunset Curve and then the Phantoms and Julie and the Phantoms were a few years older. And so they seemed like they were at a similar developmental stage to Julie. And then you have Carrie and Flynn, who I think were also maybe a couple years older. Or but then you have this kid who looks like a literal baby compared to all of them.
I mean, and the again, look I'm is sure definitely a little bit of it, but I also just think it's like, I also just think it's his personality in the show. Mm-hmm. Like, he just seems like a high school freshman, like, so hard.
And we don't know actually how old they are, right? Yeah, well, that's the thing. He's a bit of a cardboard of a person.
Right, they just don't give him a lot of personality, and he really suffers then in comparison to the Phantoms, who are the other three, like, primary recurring boy characters, who have these big, bold, individual personalities, and each of them is so clearly established as the type of person that they are as early as this episode that you don't get a lot of that for Nick.
Yeah, like, we find out that he is supposedly nice and he can play the guitar, and other than that, we have no information about him at this time. Except that he's dating someone really mean, so how nice can he really be?
Yes. Yes, and I feel like it's written to kind of, like, garner sympathy for him, like, oh, like, it's not his fault he has a mean girlfriend, and I'm like, well, he is dating her, so. Again, it's a show for teens, so, you know.
I still would have judged.
Well, they go to music class, and we see Nick play guitar, and then it's Julie's turn to, you know, play for the class, and she goes up, sits at the piano, and then announces that she's sorry, she can't do it. And so, basically, this was her last shot. She's out of the music program.
Yeah. And, of course, Carrie decides to be evil in this and be like, is this where we should clap? Which, like, why doesn't the teacher say anything? She just sort of looks vaguely disappointed.
Right, like, it just, they really work overtime to, like, establish that she's the antagonist in this show.
Right. Which is funny, because there are other antagonists in this show, but.
Right. So, the day ends, Julie goes home, and we meet her dad and her brother.
Yeah, first her dad, who is named Ray, and he's apparently not great at eating. He's like, I haven't eaten all day, and Julie sort of gives him a look. So it's sort of clear that he's, like, a little bit of one of those parents who needs parenting a little bit. Like, he can't remember where his keys are. Julie has to tell him.
You get the sense that, like, you get the sense that, like, he did certain things and his wife did certain things, like, and they balanced each other out. And now without his wife there to, like, essentially fulfill her part of the equation, like, he's, even a year later, still kind of struggling to adapt to some of that.
We definitely know that he was not the person who cooked the most, because they're having spaghetti a lot. We'll find that out in a little while. But first, basically, they're planning on selling the house, so he asks if Julie can go clean out the studio and loft, and that she apparently hasn't been in since her mom died. And we find out it was her mom's music studio where they played music together. So Julie goes out to do that in a phenomenal pair of slippers that are, like, giant fuzzy paws.
Right. They look like T-Rex feet.
But fuzzy.
Essentially. Yes, but, like, fluffy slipper versions of, like, you know, T-Rex feet.
Yeah. And she pulls the cover off the piano and sits down and starts talking to her mom and somehow doesn't see the bright white sheet music sitting up there. And won't see it until much later in the episode, but, like, whatever, plot. and then she goes up to the loft and finds a CD from a band called Sunset Curve, and she decides to play it. And then she's playing it, and then there's some screaming, and then, oh no, teen boys have fallen out of the ceiling.
Yes. Much to her horror. Like,
well, theirs too. Everyone is screaming, which is really funny.
Yes. Although, I think what's funny is, like, so they know they're dead. They know they're ghosts. They're so excited to be back in the studio. What they're, like, concerned about is they don't understand why she's there. Because they're like, this well, is our
they,
space.
Well, they don't understand why, like, she can see her, see them. So, like, she starts screaming and then they freak out.
Right.
But yeah, so she obviously freaks out and, like, runs away. And her dad's like, it's okay sometimes if you see, like, I see your mom all the time. She's like, that's not the ghosts I'm talking about. I'm talking about these teen boys.
Right. Well, she doesn't say that. She's just, like, acting like he's ridiculous. And he's just like, I don't know what the problem is. I'm just trying to help you.
And so, yes. So she goes back out there with a cross to the studio to, like, ward them off, which is cute.
It's so funny because when she first runs into her room, she pulls out her phone and she's actively typing 911 with an exclamation point into the text box to send to her best friend. And as she's typing, she says, 911 means 911, Flynn. Why aren't you texting me back? And I'm like, maybe if you'd press send, she could, like, get it and then have the opportunity to respond. But you have yet to even send this text message, so I think you need to, like, give her a moment. She's... Unless she's psychic and I don't know about it, like...
Maybe she already sent a 911 and now she's sending another one.
On her way, like, running into the house? I mean, maybe, yeah. You know, teens can be quite talented, like, multitasking with their phones, but...
Yeah.
It just really got me. Right? Like, she's like, it means 911. I'm like, okay, but still, you have to call 911 for them to come help you.
Have like, you considered calling her? I mean, like, I never call people, but if it's an emergency, I'll call. And I feel like these three teen boys just fell out of the roof. Feels like an emergency.
I mean, I wonder if this teen girl comprehends that phones can be used for that purpose. Like, you know?
Yes.
She's very Gen Z. Maybe she doesn't realize.
Well, but later in the show, she pretends to take a phone call. Not in this episode.
That's true.
So.
That's okay. All right. All right, fine.
But she goes in and she's like, I know I saw something in there, and am I going crazy? And Luke, they appear, and Luke's comforting response is, well, we're all a little crazy. And then she starts screaming again, and again. They're like, stop. Stop screaming. And then they're like, this is our studio. And Luke's like, what do you mean your... Well, because she says, like, this is my studio. And Luke's like, this is our studio. The piano's new. And he, like, scoots across it because she's following him around with the cross. And then he falls onto the couch and he's like, my couch! And then he's such an idiot because he looks at the guitar and says, but that is definitely not my sixth string. And he has such a sort confused look on his face.
And they're also confused by the fact that there's chairs, like, hanging from the ceiling. Like, they... Like, clearly, like, in a storage manner, you know? Like, my dad had, like, beams in his garage, and they were in a way so that he could, like, hang stuff up off of them or whatever. And that's clearly what they've done in this space, is, like, hang up furniture that's not being used. But they're all looking at it like they don't understand the fact that you can do that with furniture, and they, like, jump to the conclusion that maybe she's magic, and, like, a witch or something, because what is happening that this woman can see them and that she's in their space, and... She has magical furniture hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Reggie's like, maybe she's a witch, and Alex is like, witches aren't real, and Reggie's like, until recently we didn't think ghosts were real either, so, and Luke's like, so are we going with witch? And Alex is like, no!
Alex is very much not down with the idea that she is a witch, like, he thinks this is ridiculous.
But then he says, like, let someone with a softer touch handle this because she's freaking out. And his softer touch is to go up to her and say very loudly, why are you in our studio?
It's such a teenage boy move. And I love him for it so much. Like,
he's
so
never spoken to a woman in his life.
They do this great thing where, like, he's really smart and sweet and sensitive, and we, like, learn so much about him in this episode and then throughout the rest of the show, and, like, Alex is not a character that I would call dumb by any means, but, like, sometimes teenagers just do dumb things, and this is just a dumb thing that he manages to do, and it's just, so hilarious.
Like, it's very charming of him, because he clearly thinks that this is a softer touch, but it's so blunt.
It's so aggressive. He's, like, yelling in her face, and also, like, he's asking her a question, but he's clearly not asking her the right question. Like, this...
Right, and then she's like, this is my studio, and he's like, you've really brightened up the place with the flowers, but, like, please leave. And she's like, you're dead.
Right. She, like, they're like, yeah, you can leave, this is our space, and she's pretty much like, no, you guys need to leave. Like, what are you doing here? They do manage to convince her that, like, they are a band, and that they died, and, like, start telling her a story, so she looks it up, which they don't understand, because obviously they're not familiar with, like, modern phones, but
she says she's Googling, they're like, who you calling? And she says, I'm Googling Sunset Swerve, and they all at the same time say, in the most offended tone of voice, Sunset Curve!
Right, like, okay then, guys. But she convinces them, like, oh, I have this article here, and turns out that you didn't die last night, you died 25 years ago. And poor Alex, they're like, this can't be the case, like, we just spent, like, an hour or so in this dark room where Alex cried, and Alex is just, like, very defensive about it, but when he comes to understand that, like, no, they actually were in there for 25 years, he's just like, I was crying for 25 years?
Like, yeah, because Reggie's like, we just went to that dark room where Alex cried, and then he's like, I think we were all pretty upset, okay?
Yes, like, he's being so defensive, like, he's kind of acting like, maybe I cried, but, like, it was, like, we were all crying, and then when he realizes, like, this has for sure been 25 years, immediately he's just like, excuse me, no, I cried this whole time.
I cried for 25 years, how's that possible? And then Reggie says, well, you're a very emotional person, and Alex goes, I am not, in the most emotional tone of voice.
In exactly that tone, sweet bean.
His voice
hits that note and everything.
The actor who plays him, Owen Patrick Joyner, does such a good job with the tone shift to, like, evoke these emotions. Like, you'll hear it a lot throughout the show. And then Carlos, Julie's little brother, shows up and is like, why are you weird? Like, stop being weird and talking to yourself, because he can't see the ghosts. Come have dinner. So, she's gonna leave, but then Luke, who is already so down bad for her, is like, wait, we don't know your name yet, please. And she's like, I'm Julie. And he's like, I'm Luke. And then he has them introduce themselves, and Julie's like, you still need to move out.
Please. Right.
Okay.
Noted. Please leave.
And then and Reggie's like, Julie seems nice. And Alex is like, did you miss the part where she kicked us out?
Yes. And again, Luke, who is still, you know, very, very down bad for her, immediately follows her as she's going into the house and is like, hey, like, you know, I'm sorry. Like, I know this is overwhelming for you, but, like, you know, you gotta understand
that's where later. We're coming from. That's not even that part yet.
Okay. All right.
This is the part where Julie goes to have dinner and they're having spaghetti again, and they put up a place for their mom, who died. But then they have to hide it because Aunt Veronica shows up. Tia shows up with, like, lots of food, and she's a bit of a busybody, and is talking to them about, like, stuff, but then the guys show up, and it's very funny, because they, like, walk into the house, and Julie's, like, bugging about it. I just used the most clueless 90s term. She's freaking out about it, and she's like, you need to leave, and her aunt's like, I'm here to help! She's like,
yes,
that's not what I meant. And then poor Reggie is trying to herd Alex and Luke out the door. And he says, we should have called first.
Like, how? Make it make sense. The aunt is such an interesting character to me. And I want to take a moment and talk a little bit about what you think of her and just, like, her approach to, like, their grief and telling them they need to move on and everything, and, like, how you feel about her a little bit as a character.
Yeah, she is an interesting character. She's definitely a very dominant personality, and it's clear that since their mom died, she has taken a pretty active role in trying to keep them going. Like, the way she talks to Rey, it seems very much like she's gotten quite involved. And she's the one who reveals, actually, that Julie got kicked out of the music program because she got the email from the school, which suggests that she's quite involved with what's going on with them at school, too, that she's listed as, like, a contact for the school. So, yeah, I know that you had some thoughts about her. And I don't want to steal your thoughts.
I just find her very interesting because, like you said, she clearly has, like, a really strong relationship with Rey and her niece and nephew, and obviously has, like, a lot of love for them. Like, she's, you know, coming to their house and, like, doing all of these things to basically take care of them. She's cooking them home-cooked meals. We learned that Julie's mom was her sister, so she's not related to Rey by blood. She's related to him by marriage through her sister, which means that she also experienced a loss. And I feel like there are two ways to interpret this, and only one of them really works for me. Because the first way to interpret it is just basically that, like, she is, like, a psychopath who doesn't, like, have any feelings about her sister or care that her sister died. And she's just like, yeah, no problem. Like, I'm just gonna make you food and we're gonna move on. Like, we're letting this go. We're moving on from this loss. Which just doesn't seem like the case, considering her relationship with the rest of the family. And I think a stronger possibility is the fact that she is not processing her grief and the loss as it affects her the way that she should. And she's instead, like, avoiding all of that. And some things that really clue me into that, other than, like, obviously her very perky attitude, are the fact that, like, she's telling them, like, moving out is moving on. She wants them to, like, get away from the house that her sister lived in. Which implies, like, that's how she is handling her grief, is, like, kind of moving away from it, instead of, like, processing it. She also talks about the music program like it's not the best choice for Julie.
She seems to think that it, I don't know, is sort of a waste of time. She's like, you can focus on other school stuff now. And we don't know much about, like, how Julie's doing in other classes or anything. But either way, it seems almost like their aunt kind of thinks music is a waste of time a little bit, or, like, not a thing to focus as much energy on, which is interesting given her sister was, like, a musician.
Right. And we know that Julie has been avoiding music because it's painful for her to involve herself with, you know, music, given that it was something that not only did her mother do, but, like, they did it together. They made music and performed music together. And that was kind of a thing that they bonded over and shared. And I think there's something that kind of makes sense to me, too, that, again, like, Aunt Victoria could be expressing some avoidance here, that she's trying to get Julie away from that, or, like, emphasize that it's just not that important, because maybe she's also having a really hard time with music and the loss of her sister as a musician. And while they may not have shared that, maybe, you know, Victoria wasn't a musician, it's clearly something that she would heavily associate with her sister, who very much was. And maybe that's part of why she feels this compulsion to, like, devalue it a little bit. Not because I think she's trying to degrade her sister or act like, you know, her sister and what she did wasn't important, but, like, I think she's just trying to create a lot of emotional distance, maybe, from the loss. Whereas in comparison, Rey is really interesting because I don't think he's trying to, like, hold on to their mother in an unhealthy way, but he clearly is processing the loss and is like, yes, she's gone, but that doesn't mean I want to give up all of the things that made her part of my life.
Right. Like, I think, I don't know. I think people process grief in really different ways, but I don't get the sense that Rey is grieving in a manner that's, like, unhealthy necessarily.
Right. I think,
you know, she says this sort of really judgmental thing about, like, I see things are going better here, pointing to where they would have had the placemat set up. And it's like, what is the harm of including your mom, like, including this member, this relative in meals? Right. Like, of they know she's gone. It's not right. Like they're talking to her like she's still there. They're just including her presence in meals. Like, that's not...
Right.
I don't know. I have some issues with that.
Yeah, absolutely, because there is a difference between, you know, suffering under some kind of delusion that their mom is still alive or is going to be present at meals or whatever, and, like, holding space for her memory in their lives and, like, you know, honoring her in that way. And, I mean, every culture does that differently in how we honor the people that we've lost and, you know, how we create space for them. A lot of cultures have, like, different types, not just of, like, funeral services or whatever, but, like, of different memorial days and different ways of incorporating, you know, the memories of people into their culture. I don't know. I know that the characters, Julie and her family in this movie, on both sides of the family, are some kind of Latin American. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're, you know, what specific, like, country of origin they're yeah. from or what specific ethnicity they are. So I'm not going to, like, sit here and try to guess what those different, like, cultural norms may be. And I'm not going to assume that just because they're from a specific country that they celebrate those things in their home or, like, follow those specific traditions. But, like, it is something that people all over the world do in different ways, is find ways to, like, honor the memory of people they lost and hold space for them. And that's clearly what they're doing here, just by having her a place at the table, is just, like, honoring her memory and, like, you know, her the space that she was meant to take up, like, in their lives. And yeah, I think you're right. Like, it really says avoidance to me that the aunt is like, oh yes, like, let's not do that. Because it really screams to me that she's not able to process that grief and instead is just, like, mm-hmm. not looking at it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's
right. And I think it's
fair.
I think it's meaningful too, then, that this episode in particular is all about Julie getting back into music and helping her not continue to avoid the thing that connects her with her mom.
Yeah. It definitely is a big theme of this episode.
Yes.
So all this is going down, and Rey is quite upset that Julie did not tell him about the music program.
Mm-hmm.
But they are interrupted because, oh, hey, the boys are out in the studio playing music, and it turns out they can be heard but not seen.
Mm-hmm.
So Julie's like, I left the stereo on, and runs out there. Mm-hmm. And is like, what are you doing? People can hear you. And they're stoked.
Which, I mean, like, reasonably right. so.
But they don't have time to get into this because Rey shows up to be like, are you okay? And she, yes. and hey, look at all this stuff. We could sell this. And the boys are pissed.
Like, make him stop touching my drums.
Luke makes this face at Julie where he turns around and he's like, and she just makes this face at him like, what am I supposed to do?
Right. Like, it's so funny.
But Rey says it was good music. And Reggie's like, he's nice. And Alex is like, he's a dad. It doesn't count if he likes our music.
Even though you could tell that Alex, like, still appreciates it.
He's moderately that, like, chuffed.
Right. He's, like, doing that, like, aw, shucks, like, kicking his foot kind of thing. It's very cute. Yeah. And he's just like, it doesn't count. But It's also hilarious to consider the fact that Rey is probably the same age they would, like, they would be if they had not died. Like, yes, he is a dad, and so realistically, like, in terms of actual age, personality-wise and everything, he is older than them, but, like, had they not died, they would be his age. They would probably also be dads.
Yeah. It's true. So Julie then leaves, and Luke comes to talk to her about it, and is like, he says all this stuff where he's like, you have to understand that, like, we've had a bad 25 years, and we just found out we can play music again, and we're super stoked, and you can make us leave, but you can't make us quit music. And it's like, no one asked you to, she just wants you to leave.
Right, she just wants you to stop disrupting her life, like.
And then he's like, you know, music is important to us. Clearly, like, your mom understands that. Like, she's a musician. She's great. And Julie's like, she was a musician. She died. And I just want to take a moment to appreciate Charlie Gillespie, who plays Luke, his face. Because you see the, like, traveling of the emotions of, like, I'm mad to, wait, what did she say to, oh my god, what did I just say?
Yes. Yeah, he does such a great job with that, you know, facial journey and the emotions. And one thing I really appreciate is that, yes, he's dead. Like, the boys died and essentially they're ghosts now. But it doesn't remove him from the ability to, like, understand and relate to her loss. And he doesn't, like, act like it's no big deal or dismiss it in any way. Like, to him, he still understands the impact it would have to lose a parent. And he's just like, oh yes, this is actually really terrible and, like, very emotional. And he has, like, so much empathy for her in that moment.
Yeah. His face, like, blanches, which I love, which is, like, a word you read all the time in books and you don't understand it until you see what his face does in this second.
Yes.
And then she's like, I guess you guys can stay here. It's fine. Like, there's a couch that pulls out into a bed, which clearly they know if it's Luke's couch, and there's a bathroom in the back in case you, like, in case any of this stuff is relevant. And Reggie's like, dibs on the shower, as though he's just going to live in the shower for the rest of his fun life.
I just really like showers and the occasional bath.
And they're just so happy. And then, yeah, so Julie is off to bed. And the boys are off to the Orpheum, where they've been bouncing around with their ghosty powers. Reggie has lost his shirt, although he finds it. It comes back to him. I love the idea of his shirt having just been left behind wherever they were before, and I'm very sad we didn't get a scene of a shirt just floating in midair.
Would have been so good. Just, like, the shirt waiting for him to pop back.
And they're sad because they didn't get the chance to play at the Orpheum, but they're like, hey, now we can stay out at the clubs all night and have a good time. So they're off to do that, but somebody bumps into Alex, which is unusual because, as we know, living people can't touch the dead.
Mm-hmm. They just pass right through.
We'll come back to that, and it's the next morning, and Julie comes out and finds the music that Luke had mentioned that her mom left a song behind, was a really talented songwriter. So Julie comes out and finds it. It is a song called Wake Up. And Julie starts playing it and somehow knows all of the words and the piano music for it, and is playing the song, and everybody hears. Her dad hears, her brother hears, and the boys show up and they hear too.
Yes. Well, we said we'd be brief and it's already been almost an hour, so before we talk about the music, is there anything about this episode that you really want to take a moment to discuss that we haven't done already?
This show doesn't focus that much on Carlos, but I do think it's important to point out that, like, he clearly has decided to take on this role in the family as, like, the one who's okay.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. You know, he's joking around, he's clearly making an effort, but we see when Julie plays music again, like, how relieved he seems. Like, he seems really, really happy about that. So we don't get a ton of him in the episode, but I do just want to note that, like, we've got Carlos here, who is seems to have been taking on a little bit of some of that role.
Yeah, there's a very interesting thing that can happen in sibling dynamics, and where often what we see is parentification, where an older sibling is responsible for caring for a younger sibling. And it's possible we have some of that here. I mean, again, with the loss of their mother and Julie being older, you know, she may be doing things for Carlos that she wasn't necessarily responsible for doing before. But there's also instances where a younger sibling will change their behavior and try to kind of modify themselves to like seem less of a responsibility to the older siblings, I think, because they see what that sibling is going through and the emotional mm-hmm. toll they're taking on and are trying to like relieve that and protect them in some way. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing from Carlos here, is that he's trying to make things easier for her by being light and silly and a bit of a jokester. And, you know, one of the ways that we see that is when Aunt Victoria leaves, obviously Ray is going to confront Julie about, you know, being let go from the music program. And Carlos immediately jumps in and is like, oh, did I tell you this story about this thing that happened in the, you know, sport I play, blah, 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 to try to direct the attention away from that. And Ray obviously sees right through it and sends him away and, you know, has the conversation anyway. But like, you know, he picked up on that and was like making the effort to kind of protect his sister, which is notable.
Yeah. What about you? Anything else you feel like?
We didn't really talk about the fashion at all in this episode, and I think it's going to be something that I want to talk about throughout the episode, so let's just go ahead and start here for a minute. One, like you said, they're a 90s band, so they have a little bit of that, you know, grungy style and everything. I like that each of the boys are styled, again, in a very distinct way. Like, they don't try to look like a homogenous group. They actually each have their own look. And that all kind of really fit their personalities. And I don't know, like they're really fun. Reggie has like this big leather jacket and, you know, this flannel that he's wearing and everything. And Luke is in these like cut-off shirt, like t-shirts, whatever. So these sleeveless shirts and, you know, all of these bracelets and everything that he's wearing. Alex wears like a lot of pastel colors and like he wears like, you know, tighter fitting pants and a lot of like rings and stuff. And like, they all have their really distinct looks. And I think that really works for them.
I'll have a lot to say about Alex's pants going forward.
Yes. But like,
you know,
they all have very fun looks that I really like. And even when, you know, they find their clothes or whatever in the studio and Luke changes his outfit, like it doesn't change his style. It just changes his clothes.
Oh my God, spoilies.
Anyway, what a goober. But we also have Julie, who again, like has her own very unique style. And we have Flynn, who has like a very unique look. I'm pretty sure her earrings say like whatever.
Yeah.
Like one is what and one is ever. And they're like bright pink and super dangly. And like, I love them. And, yeah, like they just, they have these very like fun, vibrant, colorful, really artsy outfits that I just love. Cause again, it'd be really easy to just put them in whatever and just be like, oh yeah, they're just like basic high school kids in like jeans and a t-shirt. But like, they really go out of their way to give all of their outfits a lot of like personality and style, and like, they're very fun.
Yeah, they really are.
So, the music.
The music. So we get two songs in this episode. Wow, we are treated. The first song we get is Sunset Curve, Now or Never. Mm-hmm. And I think this song is really interesting. I noted some lyrics that I think are important. So some of them are, don't look down because we're still rising up right now. Keep dreaming like we'll live forever, but live it like it's now or never. This is a song that's a lot about, like, living in the moment, but also, like, having dreams and, like, recognizing that you have ambitions and goals and stuff. That's really evoked through this song that I love. It was actually, at first, when I first watched the show, I wasn't as into this song, and over the times I've watched it, it really grew on me. Because I think it's just such an interesting song, and given what happens to them is, like, such a tragic song, because, like, you know, we're here now, but they say sort of, like, we're not living for tomorrow, we're just living for today, and it's like, well, then they died. So right. Yes, they are, in fact, just living for today. One of the most notable lyrics in this song that it took me several watches to pick up on, that a connection to the later song in the episode, is the line, we're the revolution that's been singing in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to come back.
Yes. This song, to me, has, like, major YOLO vibes, but, like, not in a typical, like, nihilistic way, but in this very, like, bold and hopeful and, you know, don't hold yourself back, go for the things you want, dream big, carpe diem kind of way. It's enthusiastic and it's grand, I feel like, in its sense of, like, they're at the point in their lives where they could do anything, they could be anything, and they're pushing themselves to become the, you know, who they want to be.
Yeah. It makes sense for who they are as characters.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think that they continue to have that attitude throughout the whole show. Like, they very much hold on to that idea of, like, we have all this potential to do something amazing.
Yeah.
And then the other song that we have is Wake Up, which is one that Julie performs at the end of the episode.
This song is one of the songs that really gets me every single time I listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's such a powerful anthem for loss and depression, and, like, as someone who has struggled with mental health for many, many, many years of my life, I think just the message of, like, all you have to do is wake up every day is one that's really powerful, because in those lowest moments, sometimes even waking up and getting out of bed just feels like so much effort, and so it's like, just wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up if it's all you do.
Yes. And I think it's obviously meant to be taken both literally and figuratively, because she, you know, this is a song that was written by Julie's mom for Julie. We get the impression that Julie's mom knew that she was going to pass, because obviously she wrote this song, there was some anticipation there. I don't know if that was a very quick thing or if it was something that took place over a period of time, because again, we don't really get into those details and I'm not sure that they're that significant, but, you know, she wrote this for her daughter, to, I think, really help her process that loss. And obviously there is that idea, like, just wake up, just, you know, take things day by day. Just, you know, do whatever it is you can do to keep going. But there's also that figurative idea of, you know, wake that spirit. I want to hear it. Like, this idea that it's not just enough for Julie to survive. Like, her mom wants her to live. Her mom wants her to thrive and have a life that, again, is, like, full of beautiful things. Like, and that starts with her kind of coming out of the darkness of that grief and, like, stepping forward into something else. And so this song is, like, really powerful for that reason, too.
Yeah. And also, like, one of the things they say is, like, and you'll use the pain. I'll use the pain because it's part of me. Like, this idea of not trying to escape the things that hurt you, but recognizing that they exist inside of you and that they can be something you can draw on, even, like, and I think that's, like, a good metaphor. That's a good explanation of a lot of what happens in this show, of, like, recognizing that painful things can't and shouldn't be excised from you. You can't just get rid of all of it and pretend it's not there, because it is part of you and it's going to play a role in your process. But again, yes. I think there's a line here, and this is a line that, again, like, it took several listens to get the connection here, but even though I'd heard all the lyrics of both songs, there's a point where several points where it's repeated, it's not what you've lost, it's what you'll gain, raising your voice to the rain. And if we pull that back in reference to the song Now or Never, when they say, we're the revolution that's been singing in the rain. I'm going to want to come back to this later in the show, because there's going to be some stuff we find out about Julie's connection to the boys and, like, why they're here. But I just, like, want us to note the fact that there is that explicit connection here about, like, raise your voice to the rain and we are singing in the rain, and the fact that, like, the boys and Julie have now been connected.
Yes, absolutely. I will also say, when I listen to that line and, like, I give it thought and attention, it just, I don't know. Again, there's something very, like, 90s about that idea of, like, they're the revolution, they're something new. Like, it's just very that era. And I like that they're able to connect it with the lyrics while still feeling like they're spanning those decades. So, like, they're not just connecting through the lyrics, they're kind of connecting through, like, time, too. And through the eras in which their music was, like, created and fits.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, is there anything else we feel like we need to talk about for a 30-minute TV show episode that we've spent over an hour talking about?
No. I think if we haven't covered it by now, then, like, I don't know what to do. You know, this is already so much, but yeah, hopefully we can maybe move a little bit quicker if we have a little bit less to cover with all of the, like, preceding stuff in future episodes. But I don't know. Yeah, I really enjoy it. And I think it's a great way to kick off the show. I like that they bookend it with the songs.
Yeah. For a show and about you? Music, I love that they have music at both ends.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Well, all right. We'll be back at some point. We're going to try to release these regularly, but along with our other podcast commitments, we're not entirely certain exactly mm-hmm. what our release schedule will be like for these. Hopefully weekly or so. Every other week, maybe. Whenever we get them out, but we'll be back soon with episode 2.
Yes, we are super excited for that. These are obviously coming out on their own podcast feed. So if you know, found us, you're going to see that it's under the Loud and Clear feed, which is awesome. But if you're wanting to find out when the episodes are going to be released, we're going to be announcing that on our social media platforms for our other podcast, Totally Normal About That, because having so many social medias is just too much for me to manage. So if you don't follow us on our other social medias for Totally Normal About That, and you want to know when these episodes are going to come out, go follow us. We're on Tumblr. We're on Blue Sky. We have an email. And that'll all be, you know, in the show notes. So.
Yep. Yeah. We'll see you then.
Yeah. All right. Bye.